Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And CinemaCon happened this weekend, or this past week.
It has. There's a lot of like crazy stuff that's come out of it. Stuff that I kind of want to see. We also have a trailer for an infamous movie, like for a sequel to an infamous movie that everybody either loves or hates, depending on whether you're an incel or not. And then we've also got some. Man, we gotta talk. I guess we have to talk about X-Men 97. I mean, we have a time frame that we're working with here, but we have to talk about some of these things. And I definitely wanted to talk to somebody about this X-Men 97 madness that just happened. But what do we want to tackle first? Do we want to talk about?
Let's talk about the negative first. Get why some people are like, "Hey, this trailer's really good." Because it's not that it's a bad trailer.
No, it's not.
It's just... I think all of this is just a terrible idea. And I'm depressed that they're continuing down this road.
You know, when I'm... Like, okay, so like, guys were talking about Led Joker. Yeah.
Yeah, Joker 2. I don't. No one in this country, unless you're super pretentious and also an incel, is going to be able to say Joker La Folie à Dieu.
Mm-hmm.
They're all just going to call it Joker 2. So I don't know what they're doing. Even from the jump with the title, I'm just like, what are we doing? What?
You know, fucking, like, is he a fan? Okay, so, like, I have to ask, because it makes me giggle every time when I hear that fucking stupid trailer, or that stupid name, or see that stupid name. Is he a fan of the Hot Shot series? Is that what he, like, I mean, he's a comedy guy, right? He comes from comedy. Is he a fan of Hot Shots Part 2? which is making fun of sequels, right? Like, is he trying to burn down what... Like, it's just so many questions about this. Like it's up its own ass. Like, yeah, I mean, the thing that I'm always, like, I'm very struck by is, like, why aren't we talking more about the photocopy of Scorsese's, like, filmography? Like, this is New York, New York. This is, like, literally Scorsese's, like, musical version of, like, you know, the stuff that he was doing in the early 80s. But it's just like, I don't know, man. Like, so circa 1997, I could see this movie happening and being a big thing because we don't talk about mental illness in the way that we do now. Like 20 years ago, yeah? 20, 30 years ago? Probably. Right now, like, it's very weird that we have this movie. Like, even the first Joker is, like, playing with mental health tropes. In a very, like, it's not even un-PC, it's just unwell. Like, yeah, everything that it does...
It's not right. I mean, it's like watching... I don't know. I hate to make this, like, extreme a comparison, but it does feel a bit like watching, like, Song of the South's not even a good comparison.
No, but I get where you're coming from. Like, it's such a weird, toxic, like, and I hate using that word, but it really is because you're not doing incels any kind of favors with this, right?
Like, right. It's like excusing bad behavior, but it doesn't actually address any of the issues. And
yeah,
I had a small sliver of hope that because of the way. So the, I guess maybe possible spoilers for Harley's origin story, but there, it varies wildly. Generally, she was a psychiatrist brought in to help, and she winds up basically being infected by his madness, which is interesting. This does not seem to be the case at all, because she seems to be in the psych ward with him. And so it's just two mentally ill people off on like a mentally ill adventure. And
it literally looks like Natural Born Killers, but without the context of like the media, like serial killer thing. And who knows, maybe that's what he's using as a reference. But even then, like, it looks like, and this is like a very wild statement. And I like, okay, so like, here's the thing. I feel like Todd Phillips is an extremely talented filmmaker. Like, he's like, he is an elite level filmmaker, right? Like, I like, you watch these, like, any movie that he's done, and there is serious skill at the hands of this guy. But the problem is, and the problem since the inception of his career has been that there's this amoral compass there, where like what's funny is super mean, but also like on the cusp of being psychotic. I mean, just look at the fucking Hangover films. Like literally look at the Hangover films, and they're literally Las Vegas, like dirty fucking, like, you know, dirty amoral fucking comedies, right? And I'm not saying that that's a bad thing, but what I am saying is that like
there's a weird frame of reference with those. Yes, though. Like
there is.
You get like that these aren't necessarily the best people. Like, they're just kind of scumbags, and that the one dude who isn't necessarily a complete scumbag, at least in the first movie, gets like excised from the film pretty early. Yes. You know,
he
like,
really does.
Everybody else is just like extremely toxic in their own way, you know? Mm-hmm. And
no, absolutely.
It's very easy to see that, where the Joker just seems to make excuses, not even excuses. There is no ground for, like, the one or two people in that film that try to ground the story and be like, this isn't okay, are presented as like just people not to be trusted or horrible, or, you know, like Robert De Niro's character, you know.
Yeah.
Is he exploiting this dude? Yes. But like, he's also not wrong, you know? Like,
absolutely. Like, there's just this weird quagmire, because it's like at the end, like, I like the idea of, okay, so like, I like ideas, but the execution is always just weirdly fucked up. It's like the whole thing of Thomas Wayne, right? The whole, like, the quagmire of Thomas Wayne. And I like that idea of churning, like, inversing it and making Joker the people's hero, and Thomas Wayne this, like, piece of shit billionaire, which, I mean, he truly is. I mean, they even get the guy who specializes in being a piece of shit as Thomas Wayne, right? Like, I can't remember the guy's name, but
like that guy. Like, Elon Musk is Thomas Wayne?
No, because
myself.
But I mean, like, he literally is this version's answer to Elon Musk, right?
Right.
Like, he is a true piece of shit, and I understand what they're trying to do with it, but it's like, after everything is has said and done, and the fact that we, like, literally in between the time that Joker has been released and this one has, like, this movie has proven itself to be like nitroglycerin, or you know, fucking...
I mean, we had an attack
on the state itself.
On our capital.
Yeah, exactly. Like, by the people that love this fucking movie. And, like... I don't know, man. Like, I look at it and it's like, I can watch a movie outside of the bubble, right? But I'm not every person. And the whole thing is that it's just like, I don't know, man. You're promoting like this weird thing of like he's a hero, but he's an anti-hero. And it's not the 1970s, right? It's not even the 80s.
Like, yeah. This is not falling down. Like, as much as you want it to be, it's not falling down. Like, you watch that movie, you understand where that man is coming from, but you also understand, like, he's having a break.
A break, a psychotic break. And you understand that. And at the end of the movie, like, I'm not saying that you need to morally tie this up in a fucking nice bow. But at the end of it, you have a voice of reason that goes, no, you are wrong.
Yeah.
This is not order. This is fucking chaos. You cannot just get out of the line.
It's why Joker doesn't necessarily work without Batman.
Exactly.
And honestly, I mean, I hate to... He's also... You're not doing... I know everybody borrows from everybody. But you're just not doing anything remotely original. Not even with the Joker. The idea of the Joker being, like, for the people, literally, like, in cinema, dates back to the first, like, Michael Keaton Batman movie.
Yep.
Like,
the very first.
That's that whole thing is like he's throwing money out in the street and like the city loves him and you know, you're not doing anything bad. So we're talking about the first movie, but like the trailer for this movie is kind of a nothing. It just gives us glimpses at this weird romance, which. Mm-hmm. I will say the idea that, you know, you are this mentally ill and you meet somebody who's also mentally ill and you fall in love and like you're having this kind of whirlwind classic romance inside of this madness is interesting. It is interesting, but is this just going to be natural born killers without like the bits of the other side?
The media commentary, because and that's the difference is that Oliver Stone in 1994 was commenting already on like the media's fascination with serial killers and with violence. And he kind of said everything you need to know. Now, of course, every generation needs this, but there was it's so weird to say this that we've come full circle where everybody hated Oliver Stone, but now everybody kind of loves him because he is a median. Like it's amazing me to think that in 30 years he's become like everybody used to call him kooky and a crackpot, but his movies are more like scions into the future. Like Natural Born Killers is a clear eyed depiction of what we fucking do nowadays.
Yeah.
Right. And there's purpose in the first Joker. It's just it's a fucking remake of Taxi Driver without the moral quandary of violence, which Scorsese did, or like this one, which feels like I said, Natural Born Killers, but without the kind of.
Yeah, in Taxi Driver, you get that Travis Bickle is problematic. And
exactly.
And it's like the only thing that's supposed to tell us that the Joker's problematic is that, oh, we know it's the Joker. And he, like, if you strip all of that away, like, there is something so fucked up about this movie. I mean, even with it is, but Yeah, and adding, so my one fear about this sequel is justifying toxic relationships.
Yep. And that's what's going to happen. We already know it because of the way that he handles. Okay, so like spoilers, like I'm going to say spoilers for Joker and the ending of this movie and the ending of the first movie if you haven't seen it. I'm going to give you that. And now I'm going to say the ending, which is that, and this is very important for this conversation, which is that so the Zazie Beetz character is a figment of his fucking imagination, and we don't get any kind of like the reveal is just that. It's just like, oh, by the way, quirky thing, it's all made up in his head. Basically a masturbatory incel fantasy of his perfect person. But there's no relevance to it, right? Like there's no smack on the head emotionality of this guy is really fucking disturbed. Like this guy is fucking morally like just corrupt and bankrupt, and there's something very sad about it. No, it's just this like weird reveal with no context. And you know, I was with the movie until it did that with her and the kid. And then after that, I just threw up my hands and I was like, I knew you were gonna fucking do this, but you didn't land it with any sort of emotional heft or any kind of like understanding of like it just it kept on doing the lost like no compass, no moral
Yeah.
compass. And I'm not saying that you need a moral compass, but you kind of fucking do. Like when you're going this far out, like I don't know, dude. Like when I watched The Joker, the thing that's super crazy to me is it's super amoral. Like in the way that Taxi Driver is amoral, the way that Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer is amoral. But here's the thing with both of those movies is that at the end, they both, like, there are certain pinpoints in those movies where the light comes out to shine on it, and it never says it implicitly, but it definitely shows that these fucking people are fucking wrong for what they're doing. They're unhinged. They don't have any assistance. They don't have any kind of. They don't have an anchor, and that's the reason why. And Todd Phillips in the Joker movie, it's like, it's all the bad stuff, but none of the shining the light down on things in a way that goes, this person needs help. They are severely ill. Like there's no moment in that. Like even in Natural Born Killers, it's very apparent. Like they're in prison for most of the film. Like the way that it's framed is that they're like they've been caught, but like even a contained tiger can be dangerous, right? Like there's nothing about that kind of stuff in the origin in Phillips's Joker. It's all like psychosis and like psychologically disturbed, like you know, storytelling without that kind of okay, guys, this isn't just a jerk off, this is like we're showing you for a purpose. There's no purpose to it. Like, I figured that the Zazie Beetz thing was going to be some kind of moral, like, or some kind of like bastion of light, right? Like, showing. Like, no, you're wrong. Like something inside you there is wrong, and you can tell. Like, no, it's just let's just continue on. And at the end, you know, I'm gonna shoot fucking Robert De Niro, and I'm gonna start a riot, and I'm gonna just fucking dance the light night away. Like
Yeah.
it's literally what I got. I'm like, oh God. And you know, like you have to like I don't know. Like it's fucking just. It's so weird and quagmirey and like swampy in its delivery of its like whatever its fucking message is. I don't know if I really want a sequel that doubles down on that. It actually says there's a part of me that feels like this movie is going to say, oh, well, it's okay to be psychotic as long as you have somebody there that understands your point of view. And it's like, no, fuck
Or
no.
makes excuses for like the one thing Well, there's a lot of things I love about the Harley Quinn show.
Yeah.
But very early on, I was not a fan. Like, the first season was a little rough for me. But one of the things I appreciated that from the jump, it had Harley going like, wait a minute. This is not a good relationship. Like, this is abusive. This is toxic. Mm-hmm. And I've got to get out of it. And I just, it's very upsetting to me to, like, maybe they don't do that with this movie, but I just, based on the first movie, I don't see how it doesn't just become, like, that kind of signpost of, like, no, see, it's not that there's a problem with us, it's that there's a problem with everybody else.
No, absolutely. And you know what? Todd Phillips has not shown any kind of like anything other than like he's not shown that he has that in him. Like any of his movies have shown that he doesn't have that in him. So like I'm going based off of like, you know, he's going to lean into this. And I'm not saying like, look, like if you guys want to go see it, you guys want to go see it. I mean, I'll probably go see it. Yeah.
Curiosity will get the best of me.
Yeah. I mean, this fucking thing's going to be huge. And for most people, I would say, like, for 95% of the people that are going to be seeing this, their psychology and their moral compasses are going to be able to guide themselves through this and understand that this is just trash, right? But it's those 5%. It's that 5% that I just cannot trust anymore. We've seen it too much. You know, the guys that fucking worship, like the people that worship, like, you know, taxi driver without, like, you know, for the wrong reasons, a fight club for the wrong reasons. And now Joker and Joker Part 2, like, those are the people that, like, I'm just like, why are we constructing these things? Like, we don't really need it. Like, do we really need an R-rated Joker musical?
Is there a chance? I mean, I guess there's always a chance. But yeah. I won't say is there a chance. My hope, because I'm going to preface this by saying, no matter what happens with this movie, Joaquin Phoenix will be fine. Lady Gaga will be fine. Todd Phillips will be fine. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Zazie Beetz is in it, but she's going to be fine. The quote risk takers for this movie, Warner Brothers is going to be, well, that's not going to be fine because David Zaslav's running the company, but eventually they'll probably be okay. So it's not a one for one, but Captain Marvel made $1 billion.
Yes.
Like it made so much fucking money that Disney was just like, this character, like, much like the Black Panther, but they couldn't foresee what happened with Chad.
Yeah.
They had to be we've got another hit on our hands. That sequel's going to be great. Like, and just so hopeful for it. And then the Marvels comes, but like, it does nothing. It doesn't even do half of what Captain Marvel did.
Yeah, like that they're just tired. Like audiences are tired of it. Like the quote unquote the superhero fatigue has finally been implemented after Deadpool versus Wolverine or Deadpool and Wolverine.
The best possible thing is that, in my opinion, the exact same thing happens with this fucking movie.
Yeah,
like that it makes, you know, $100,000 and people are just like, eh, no, I'm good. I don't care. I don't know that that's going to be the case. I feel like it's going to wind up doing, you know, close to what the first one did. But
if not more, like that's the thing that I honestly feel like is going to happen. It's unfortunate, but you know, they, it, and you know, the weirdest part is it's because of Gaga. Like, you know, she hasn't made another movie since A Star Is Born. So this is her second film, like after all the brouhaha of her first film. So of course, all of her fandom, what do they call them? Monsters. Her yeah. little monsters are going to go see this movie, regardless of the, like, I can already tell there's going to be an ick factor involved in this, because when you're dealing with the origins of Harley Quinn, there's an ick factor in it regardless. You know, like they're like we've never.
You actually forgot, and I'll forgive you. You forgot mm-hmm. that Lady Gaga was in another movie directed by Ridley Scott.
Oh shit, that's right, House of Gucci. Oh my god, one of my favorite bad soap opera movies of all time.
I was sitting here, that was that? Like, no, wasn't she in something recently?
Yeah, with Adam fucking Driver.
Yeah, I was like, oh yeah, that's right. She's in House of Gucci a couple of years ago.
Have you seen that fucking movie?
No, and I like Ridley Scott. I generally like Ridley Scott, but yeah, I was like, yeah, I don't think I'm gonna see that one. I actually haven't seen his last few films.
Because that's actually a great transition into the one of the other things that we're talking about, and I was gonna ask. Is there anything more that we need to talk about this dumpster fire? I mean, it's quite literally dumpster fire.
I'm sure we'll have a whole 2-hour discussion when it hits theaters later this year.
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure we're going to go full like runtime on that movie. Cause you know, that movie's going to be like 2.5, close to 3 hours. It's going to be like, I'm going to call it right now. It's going to be 2:48. Like it's going to be like close to 150 minutes. I guarantee it. And I guarantee, because of the musical numbers, like, alone, I've heard that there's 15 jukebox musical covers that they do here. So yeah. 15 indicates to me this is going to be a long fucking film. So, like, you know, incels are going to be, like, this is their movie. This is, like, you know, this is the incel of the movie. But, like, for everybody else, buckle up. It's going to be a rough ride. So CinemaCon happened, like, and... Like, you know, we're talking about fucking 82-year-old Ridley Scott brought some footage to CinemaCon. Well, like, he didn't even bring it. Paramount brought it. And from everything that I've heard, like, all of the descriptions, they won CinemaCon. Because everybody was like, you know.
Oh,
like,
shit, Gladiator 2.
Two.
Like, oh, like, my God.
But, like, the funniest part was, like, like, you know, like, there were articles a couple of weeks ago or like a couple of months ago at the end of the year where they were talking about how Ridley Scott spent more money than anybody has on a physical production, right? Like, something like the physical production cost $350 million, which means that the movie is going to cost like close to $500 million when advertising, post, and all that shit is done. But literally every news outlet, I read like 25 different articles, and every news outlet flipped their shit for the 10-minute package that they had for Gladiator 2, which everybody also forgot, like even I did. Denzel's in that fucking movie. Like, he's the co-lead in the movie. Yeah.
And I mean, Ridley Scott hasn't had a win in almost a decade, right? The Martian was probably his last. And even before that, like, it's kind of a mixed bag for a number of years. I actually haven't seen a Ridley Scott film since Alien Covenant. So,
oh wow,
I didn't see All the Money in the World. I didn't see The Last Duel. Didn't see House of Gucci. Didn't see Napoleon. I did kind of want to see this. He did this, like, I don't. Is it a TV movie or something about the Pope? Or something, but that's been over a decade ago. Vatican, like, or something like that.
Yeah, it's like a documentary that he did.
Like, I'm like kind of interested in that, but like, you know, in Exodus, Gods and Kings was.
That was rough.
I thought the counselor was extremely interesting.
I love the council.
Ultimately, like, I don't think it does much, but if it's a failure, it's at least a very interesting failure.
Have you seen the director's cut of that?
No.
The 2.5 hour? Oh, my God. Like, I love that movie because it's so weirdly dark. It's like the whole thing of, like, crime doesn't pay is, like, it's literally the point of that film. It's, like, I love it. I love it because it goes so dark so quickly, and it doesn't have, like, any, like, I know we just talked about, no, like, a moral compass, but, like, when you're dealing with the cartel, I expect that kind of stuff.
None of the characters do, but the story is very, it's like this, like, karma's gonna get you kind of thing.
Yes, very much so.
You know, it's
very,
like,
much so.
Like, everybody just kind of gets what they deserve in the end. Yep. You know?
Absolutely.
But yeah, I'm weirdly excited for, I never thought I'd be here saying I'm excited for Gladiator 2, but here I am going, I'm kind of excited for Gladiator 2.
Yeah, no, I really, like, after I've heard the descriptions, like, fucking rhinos fighting in a gladiator ring, like, boats and sharks, like, I was like, what the fuck is this movie? I need to see this footage. And I know that we're going to be getting it. Supposedly, there's a trailer being prepped for the beginning of May. Like, you know, it's going to be attached to everything so that, because it's in November, it's coming out, I think it's Thanksgiving weekend. But, like, everybody's saying, like, it looks like it's going to deliver, like, it's going to be the Ridley Scott, like, it's probably, I know it sounds sad, but it's really not, because he's had such a great career, but it's, like, it's going to be Ridley's swan song. And you know what? Having his biggest hit, like, having his most acclaimed film. Because, like, we know his biggest film is Alien, right? Like, if we're going to look at his oeuvre, he's going to be remembered for Alien. But the thing that everybody swarmed around, the thing that that pushed Ridley into the limelight again and gave him a second part of his career was Gladiator, right? And to have, like, possibly the swan song, because he's, like, 82 or 83, be a second Gladiator film, and it being, from all accounts, everybody is saying that this thing looks fucking even bigger than the first movie with the cast that he got. Like, I don't know, man, like, that shit fucking looks, that's kind of, like, awesome, right? Like, yeah. You know, like, if it's gonna, like, everybody's talking about, like, it's gonna make no money because it has to make a massive amount of money. But as we know, like, everybody thought that Gladiator wasn't gonna make a lick of money because it had some weird guy named Russell Crowe who hadn't really done anything, but had a claim. I mean, literally, Paul Mescal and, like, you know, and Russell Crowe are literally the same person, but just separated by a couple of decades, right? Like, yeah. Paul Mescal is, like, this guy who the critics love and has not had a massive hit yet, right? I mean, like, he's literally, like, I looked it up, and this is the scariest part to me, is, so Russell Crowe was, like, 31 when he made Gladiator. Paul Mescal is 28. Like, they're literally the same age. But when I look at fucking, the funniest part is that when I look at when I look at Russell Crowe, even then, like, that dude looked like a man. Like, he was a dude. Yeah. Like, he was like
Paul Mescal, watching, you're like, oh, that's just a little kid.
Yeah, but I haven't seen footage from the movie, so we don't really 100% know if he is. Yeah. But he's also surrounded by a bunch of, like, dudes, right? Like, Denzel doesn't suffer any fools. Like, that man will fucking chew you up and spit you out. Pedro Pascal is just the dude who steals scenes from you. Like, he's a star already, and, like, him doing a co-starring role in this movie is kind of, like, perfect for him because he just, like, let's steal some scenes from these fuckers. So yeah,
he's about to get, I'm not gonna be shocked if he gets his second Oscar. So
yeah, no, absolutely. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of shit going on here that it's just like, wow, okay. So, like, never doubt Ridley Scott. Like, I keep on forgetting about that. It's like, you know, there was a reason why he spent $300 million. And it appears that most of it's going to be on screen, you know? So I'm excited. Questionable before, but now after that, and all I need is just confirmation for a few images from the, or a trailer. And I'm good to go, you know?
I think it's interesting that the idea of, like, Gladiator 2 has been floated for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so the screenwriter listed for the film is David Scarpa.
Yep.
And, like, he's the only listed screenwriter. I'm maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like there were other scripts out there. So what is
there was?
What is it that this guy is the only, like, it excites me? Like, Ridley went into this going like, yeah, this is the idea that we go with. But also, this is the guy who wrote The Last Castle, The Day the Earth Stood Still, and two of the last few Ridley films, Napoleon and All the Money in the World. He also wrote a few episodes of The Man in the High Castle. So I'm like, I like the idea that this script does not have nine fucking people's names on it.
Yeah.
But also, that's a little worrisome because we know there've been scripts out there for a Gladiator 2.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this guy who doesn't necessarily have a proven track record. Like,
no, he doesn't.
None of those films were successful.
None of them. None of them were. I like The Last Castle for what it is.
Me too. Just wasn't a successful film.
No, it wasn't. Like, which is shocking when you consider the fact that it's like Redford, Ruffalo, DeRoy Lindo,
James Gandolfini.
Like all these people. And here's the thing is that it's a prison film that's kind of about hope, but kind of not. And it comes out at the same time that Shawshank is rising through, like, rising from cult classic to true, like, modern day classic. So you would think that people would be prepared for it and go see this movie, but they didn't. Like, you know, they absolutely did not. They just was like, military prisoners? Nah, we don't want to be a part of this fucking, we don't want anything about this. And then plus, like, you were right. There are literally multiple versions of the Gladiator 2 script that we heard about. My favorite one is the one that was done by what's his name from The Bad Seed? Nick Cave. Have you heard about this one? The one that he was commissioned to write that Ridley wanted to make, which was the Gladiator 2 afterlife thing, where it literally becomes God of War, where he's trying to fight through, like, Maximus has died, and he wakes up and we don't know that he's dead until, like, halfway through the film, but it literally is him chasing his wife and dead son who are in the, like in the afterlife. It's very God of War, like, and he fights different things, and then when he, like, gets to a point where he starts fighting the gods of war, and then it, like, ends up being he gets reincarnated, and Maximus becomes, like, the last 20 minutes is, like, this weird 2001 by way of war, where he, like, we flash through 1,000 years of war, and Maximus's soul is a general or a, like, a soldier in every single war that man has ever done. And it's fucking wild to think about that. Like, that could have been a sequel. Like, that's my favorite iteration of it. And I know that that's the one that Russell Crowe and Ridley wanted to make, but it was just too expensive to make. And then Russell Crowe got to be Russell Crowe, like, you know, 2.0. We know who that, we know what Russell Crowe is now. I mean, you know, let's hope that he gets to make his Pope's Exorcist trilogy, because that's where he's at now. Doing Italian accents, bad Italian accents. But yeah, like, this is something that's been in development for since the beginning, since the movie came out, like, fucking crazy. And this one, like, you're right. It's like, why is it this one that got made over all of the other iterations of the sequel with David Scarpa being, like, the lead writer? So we will find out in November. I mean, shit, we're going to find out beforehand. I mean, like, we're going to see so much footage from this movie before it comes out. We'll have seen the movie.
I'm going to have to go back and I did really like Gladiator.
And
I'm going to have to go. I haven't watched it in such a long time. In fact, I had to second guess myself because I was talking about it at work with somebody. And this guy was like, so what's it going to be about? I said, it's about his son, like, grown up. And he was like, his son's dead. And I was like, no, that kid's his son. He was like, no, he's not. I'm like, yeah, he is.
Yeah, he kind of is. Like it's implied.
Like, it's very much like, oh, they had a relationship. She had a kid. She married the emperor's douchebag son. And I was like, and he was like, but his wife and kid got murdered. I was like, yeah, but this is a different kid. Like, he was like, oh, was he like, I'm like, yeah, I don't, I was like, I haven't watched it in a while, so I don't really want to like state anything like, you know, as pure fact. I'm like, but 100%, I think the movie just straight up implies that, like, oh, yeah, you know, people had wives and then they had like the other people they were sleeping with. So I'm like, Maximus isn't necessarily the greatest guy in the world.
No.
You're just kind of following his story. He was like, but his wife and kid are dead. I was like, yes, but he has another kid.
Yes. So. They're what they call bastards. I'm not trying to be mean, just literally they are called bastards. An illegitimate child. What don't you understand about this? Very simple. It's very much so implied in the movie that her husband was not the scion of
yeah, because like her husband is dead.
Yes.
And so yeah, it's yeah. Anyway, I can't wait to go back and rewatch it. There was a lot of other stuff out of CinemaCon. I know that they screened like the first 10 minutes of Deadpool and Wolverine.
Mm-hmm.
I have not read any of the footage description because we're so close. Yeah. I'm just going to wait. I assume a new trailer is coming. I did like that Kevin Feige went out there and was like, yeah, you know how like the Dune popcorn bucket was kind of unintentionally dirty? We've decided to make an intentionally dirty Deadpool popcorn bucket. So I'm excited for that. I've been tempted by so many of these stupid, like, expensive popcorn buckets. Like, the Transformers one was really tempting. The Ghostbusters one was really tempting.
The Ghostbuster one, yeah.
This one, it'll be the first one. Like, I'm going to spend the money to get whatever stupid thing they decide to do.
Yeah. No, I have an idea, but I don't want to say it. Because I'm afraid that it's going to not happen. But I have a feeling it's going to have something to do with the Deadpool face.
Yeah.
Or Wolverine's face, right? I did read the description, so we won't talk about it. But needless to say, if you heard the intro, where he's talking, dropping F-bombs, like Kevin Feige dropped F-bombs. The opening, like, is very much so an ode to this is not your dad's Disney. And that's all I'll say. But everything that I read sounded super exciting, super very Deadpool. It doesn't sound like it's lost its bite. Like, and that's, I think, what everybody was afraid of, was that it was going to lose its bite. Yeah, it's going to get neutered. Yeah. So the bigger question I feel is going to be, what are they going to do with Deadpool after this? Like, that's probably the biggest question. for me, because like they're not going to tackle it right now, right? They're just going to let this one roll, because you can't talk about the sequel or like new iterations while you're promoting this gloriously R-rated, like, you know, Disney movie, right? Like, you just can't. Yeah. Because that would ruin, that would, like, we know it's coming. Like, that's the thing, is that you and I have talked about this for years. As soon as Fox acquired Disney, we knew that the PG-13-ifying of Deadpool was coming. We just didn't know how, where, and why it would. And Disney has kind of built in the trust. And, like, I know people want to hear about the future and all that, but they're not going to talk about it. Just shut up and stop whining and complaining and enjoy this, because this is probably, I'm going to call it right now, this is probably the last time you are going to see an R-rated iteration of this character. It just is. Like, they're probably going to throw just enough money or a lot of money at Ryan Reynolds to make sure that it's not R-rated again. Like, so, this is the swan song for me, at least. That's my thought.
I don't disagree, but I'm also not pessimistic about it, because I find a lot of humor in the bleep button.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea of making an R-rated Deadpool movie, but bleeping things, and I've said this like from the jump, like from the original, the first film, I'm like, no, if you want to do it PG-13, you just intentionally censor the movie, like obviously censor the movie. Like, don't do any, and like, and do it to a point where it's like, it, like in comics, when you censor dialogue because you're reading it, it's just a string of like symbols, right?
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. And go the extra route and just like put a black bar over their face with the string of symbols for the swear word as you're bleeping it. Like, I think there's smart and funny ways to do it. And like, I think that it'll be okay. I don't think we're looking at the end of this version of Deadpool. It's just that, like, he's going to be censored, and there is some obvious ways to add humor to the story by doing that. Like, absolutely. You know, like, the first time you censor him in, like, whatever the next iteration is, you know, he goes to curse, and it's censored, and he's like, what the bloop? Like,
mm-hmm.
What is going on? And like, just like, he's like, oh, I forgot I'm in a Disney movie now. Yeah, just anything like that. There's,
well, I feel
fun,
like, it's gonna be
ways
test
to do it.
I think that there's going to be a test inside of, I guarantee you, there's like, Kevin asked for a test to be happening inside of, inside of Deadpool versus Wolverine, where he's going to go, because he's in the TVA, or because the TVA is a part of it, and we're going to get multiversal things. There is going to be the, like, I feel like the best part of it would be him getting dumped into a Disney movie, like an animated movie, and testing it that way, where we get a classically animated version of Deadpool inside of, like, say, Tangled or something like that.
Yeah.
And he instantly jumps up and he goes, what the, and then the bar comes up, like, you know, the censoring comes up, and he like tries to pull the bar off of his mouth and shit. Like, stuff like that is going to happen. Like, that would be a smart way to introduce the fact that, guys, get ready. He's going to be detoothed, but not in the way that you think he is in these upcoming things, because we do need him in Marvel 616. And Marvel 616, or actually, is it 616? Yeah, it is.
Kevin Feige says that's the, but like, it just depends on how you look at it. That is the, our Marvel universe is 616. But if you're like me, you're like, mm-hmm. Oh no, the MCU is not 616. That's a totally separate universe.
That's the comic book universe.
Yes.
I mean, 616 is the comic book. Yes. Is the actual comic book universe. It's not the MCU.
Though Kevin Feige insisted the MCU is the 616 universe. And I'm like, I love Kevin Feige. Like, just unabashedly love the dude. We would have a, like, very heated disagreement on his stance with that.
Oh, absolutely. So speaking of Marvel 2, so we can kind of, we can kind of start pushing through this stuff. So Marvel also showed footage of Air Force One Part 2 Captain America, with everybody talking about, like, this is my problem with this. Everybody talking about Harrison Ford as President Thunderbolt Ross, right? Like, that's my problem, is we should be talking about everybody else that's in that fucking movie, but we're not, and that scares me. Like, that really scares me, and also the fact that they delayed it because they needed to work out script problems.
Yeah.
And I'm never not going to think that they're writing out Bucky. Like, I remember they said, like here's the thing, is that way back when, didn't he get announced with the cast? Didn't Sebastian Stan get announced with the cast, and now all of a sudden he's not in the movie?
He was not announced with the cast. He was announced with the cast of Thunderbolts.
Oh, okay. Well, then there we go. That explains a little bit of it. I understand the reasons why you don't include Bucky in this New World Order movie, but at the same time, if you don't have somebody to bounce off of, like, I mean, and who knows, maybe Falcon 2.0 shows up, which sounds to be probably what's going to happen. And then also Elijah is going to be there. I've heard there's a heavy component of a flashback with Elijah and digitally de-aged work, which should be interesting. But I don't know, man, like, them focusing on President Harrison Ford, like, I don't know, man, like, I'd much rather have heard something that was like, let us convince you that Anthony Mackie is the man. Because, like, let's be honest, Winter Soldier, like, I don't know if it did a great job. Like, thinking back on it now, like, it didn't do Mackie any favors. Like, the end was kind of cool, but I mean, you have this last episode where for 20 minutes he's speechifying and he's saying all the right things and Mackie delivers it in the best way he can, but it's like, we don't get a lot of what Mackie's cap is, if you catch my drift.
Yeah. So here's the thing. I love Anthony Mackie. I've always loved Anthony Mackie. I think he's so fun and charismatic. Like, he's the person I kept wanting Will Smith to be.
Yeah.
And, like, Will Smith, I think, just wound up taking himself way too seriously. I get it. I get why. Anyway, won't belabor it. I would have said, I don't know if Anthony Mackie can lead a movie like this, because Anthony Mackie, for most of his career, has been the other guy.
The second fiddle.
Yeah. And
no, absolutely.
I was really, really in doubt and worried until, weirdly enough, last year, this show called Twisted Metal showed up on Peacock. And I was like, oh, no. I really think he can do this.
He can. He can, but he needs, like,
he does need a crew. But yes. I think that's there. Like, I'm sure that the guy, the new Falcon, I'm sure that he's part of it. You know?
Yeah, he is. Oh, that's what they said. Here's my worry, is literally, like, We know that Kevin, part of the reason why he hired Chadwick Boseman was because he really, really loved 42. And who doesn't love 42? Like, when you watch that movie, like, Chad is, like, on another level. But I feel like the reason why he cast Harrison Ford was because of his love of 42 and the work that both of them did, like, Ford being so differential to Chad in that movie. Like, you go back and you watch that, that is a wonderful performance by a man who refuses to be second fiddle to anybody, but literally plays second fiddle to Chadwick Boseman in that movie. It's the reason why it works so well, because Harrison Ford is so differential to the performance. And, like, I'm going to be honest, like, one of the great, like, it's going to be like 42 is going to be one of those movies that we go back to and we go, why the fuck didn't we lionize this movie as a great sports movie? Because Chad is so fucking good as Jackie Robinson. Right.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's two reasons, Air Force One and fucking 42. Like, that's the reason why Kevin hired this guy. And he probably, you know, he probably, like all of us, wanted to work with the legend, the man, before he retires, right? And from all intents and purposes, everybody has said that Ford has been a delight on the set. He loves this stuff. His kids are, like, he's doing it for his kids like everybody else is. So, like, there's that component, which I'm just worried about. Like, I hope that Malcolm Spellman brought his AAA game like he's never brought before, because it really does need a script that's like on the level of Winter Soldier. And that's a rare thing to come around in a Marvel movie, because let's be honest, the best scripted movie from a Marvel movie is still Winter Soldier. They've never been able to top that. It's just so concise. It's so perfect. It tells the right story. It tells it with character, emotion. It has great action. And it's exactly what you want in a Marvel movie, right? Like of a certain type of Marvel movie. And I hope that they bring that. Like, I really hope, like, that's the standard I'm looking for. And I mean, I've been waiting around for a movie that's that level since Winter Soldier. And I know that's probably a controversial statement. I mean, probably nullifying some of the stuff that I've said before, but I've, like, you know, there's a difference between, like, the Guardian scripts, which are loose, funky, and emotional, as opposed to telling a perfectly modulated story, which, yeah. I will tell you, like, I'm one of the biggest Guardians fans, and I will be the first to admit, those fucking movies are sloppy messes, but they're beautiful sloppy messes.
Yeah.
But nothing has been, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't feel like anything has been anywhere approaching the perfection of the script that is Winter Soldier.
No, I agree.
Yeah. I mean, I watch that movie all the time. Like, I go back to that movie at least once a year, and I'm just like, fuck. Like, it doesn't get better than this. It really doesn't. I don't know what kind of, like, it's the, like, for me, it's the thing that the Russo brothers traded in on for such a long, well, they're still trading in on it. Like, it's what got them their Avengers movies, which are good movies, but they're not as tightly, compactly awesome as Winter Soldier is, at least in my estimation. So I'm hoping that he brings that and we get something like that. Though the footage is, like, the description of the footage is not indicated at that, because a lot of it is, it seems like Harrison Ford centric. So,
yeah, you know. I also feel like that. So I know Harrison Ford's probably going to be involved in the Thunderbolts movie as well.
Yeah.
Seems like, and I think we're going to get the Red Hulk.
Red Hulk, yep.
So, but also Tim Blake Nelson is in this movie.
Yes, as the lead, as finally the leader, like the promise shown, what, 20 years ago? I
mean, so,
literally 15 years ago?
I have a lot of, that's the other thing, right? Like, you're mm-hmm. gonna have Liv Tyler, and I get it's Thunderbolt Ross-centric,
mm-hmm.
but how are you, like, you're going to do all this and Mark Ruffalo's not going to be part of any of this?
Like, well, okay, and then Tatiana Maslany, I mean, like, okay, so, like,
yeah,
is Liv going to be She-Hulk? And then if so, that brings into question everything, right? Like, what universe, this brings up unnecessary questions of why are we having, okay, Liv Tyler's there, but if she's playing She-Hulk, there's two She-Hulks? Why didn't we know about this? Is this a different universe? Are we going to be dealing with that in, like, multiversal things? Like, I have questions about that, which confuse me more than give me clarity or give me, like, a, yeah, Liv Tyler's going to be in this. Yeah, where's Ed Norton? I mean, like, do you know what I mean? Like, it leads to more questions to me.
Yeah.
Like, but I don't know. So, I mean, Tim Blake Nelson is pretty cool.
Possible spoilers.
Okay.
Yes, in the comics, there's two She-Hulks.
Oh, yes, there is.
One of them is Betty Ross.
Okay. Okay.
So,
all right.
Possible spoilers. There's a red She-Hulk in the comics, and red She-Hulk is Betty Ross. So.
Oh. You know what? If that's the case, how cool would it be if that's her entry point into She-Hulk and Liv Tyler and Tatiana Maslany?
I mean,
like, have a team up.
She-Hulk. Like, I know, yeah, that it'll send the fucking, like, the anti-woke whatever assholes over the edge. But those two and a team up show and our movie as Red and Green She-Hulk, I am so fucking there. Like, I am there. I will buy a ticket every day.
Oh man.
That
would be fucking great. Like, that would be like just because it would piss off the Joker fans, right? Yeah, like, yeah. Just to piss them off. That would be interesting. Okay, now I'm liking it. Now I'm digging it.
Like, Charlie's Angel style show with just those two and Mark Ruffalo as Charlie.
Oh my God. Yes, please. or Kevin from She-Hulk as Bosley.
Yes, yes.
you know what I'm talking about. I mean, spoilers for a two-year-old TV show. The robot, Kevin. K-E-V-I-N. That would be amazing. Like, just lean into the stupidity of it all. Like, because, I mean, let's be honest. Like, I kind of adore, like, you know, She-Hulk is cute.
I like how goofy it is. I just,
yeah,
like
Emil Blonsky taking, like reviving Blonsky, but as Blonsky as, like, this, like, new age, newfangled, like, I'm gonna do yoga. Like, I fucking love it. Like, I really do adore that show, and I adore Tatiana Maslany. She's so fucking cute and adorable in that show. I mean, how can you hate a movie that, or a TV show that has Megan Thee Stallion twerking with She-Hulk?
I mean,
like,
people are,
honestly,
they're just gonna.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? Stay with your fucking Joker part, dude. Let a fear, yeah. Let a fear. Like, stay with that shit. But just stay off the comments field, you assholes. let me have a little bit of joy. I mean, is it because you're in fear of the Meg Thee Stallion of it all? Like, I mean, I just don't understand. Like, I don't understand how you don't find that both hilarious, kind of sexy, and kind of awesome all at the same time if you're a dude. Like, I honestly don't. Like, I just don't get it. But it's not for me to talk about right now. But when is New World Order coming out? Is it in November?
Sometime next year. No, it's next
year. Oh, sometime next year? Okay.
Yeah, only Marvel movie we get is Deadpool this year.
Deadpool, okay. Yeah, because they've got the other... Disney's got a whole other slate. I mean, we have any... like, Moana 2, wasn't it Frozen... Isn't Frozen 3 supposed to come out this year?
Maybe.
In December?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, definitely Moana 2, which we haven't seen any footage from, though I think Disney brought him out for CinemaCon to show stuff. Wicked. But like, okay, so just really quickly, Vin Diesel is Kojak. Fuck that. Seriously, fuck that. You, Telly, like, okay, so I know that Ving Rhames did an iteration of him, which was kind of funky and kind of cool. But you know what? Telly, who loves you, baby? Savalas is Kojak. If I have to hear Grumble Grumps,
who loves you, baby?
Like, no. Absolutely not. I do not need him to dom fambly eyes this fucking Kojak. Like, yeah. I'm okay with Mark Ruffalo eventually becoming Columbo because he is literally turning into my one of my favorite actors of all time, Peter Falk, before our eyes. Like, literally, Mark Ruffalo is turning into him. Like, he's going to grumble around. He's going to do the fucking... I guarantee you he will do the eventual remake of Princess Bride. And he will play the Peter Falk role. But, yeah, no. No. Can we be done with Vin Diesel?
I thought we were when all this stuff started coming out about... Yeah. Like, oh, he's not such a good guy. And... Nope, here we are back here with like, oh, it's the best script I've ever read. What the fuck ever, dude? Like, just yeah, not excited.
No, but we got fucking confirmation that we are gonna get the wildest crossover of all fucking time: G.I. Joe versus Transformers. Fuck yeah. Like, I think that's what they should be calling it. Transformers, G.I. Joe, fuck yeah. I mean, like, you and I think we're the only people that saw Transformers, the last Transformers film, and kind of loved it for what it was, which was kind of like...
It was at least a good time. Like, it was at least a good time.
And guess what? Probably, other than Bumblebee... The most accurate representation of Transformers. And nobody went to go see it. Nobody went to go see it. And then when we got the surprise of G.I. Joe, I'm going to have my peanut butter with my chocolate. I'm going to have my chocolate with my peanut butter. Like, nobody lost their shit. And it's like, I don't know, man. Like, I cannot wait to hear the cast that comes up with the G.I. Joe, like the G.I. Joe side of things. Because... if you're giving me Michael Kelly as like the leader of G.I. Joe, like if that's the level of like good actor that you're going to do for me, then yeah, I'm going to be a part of it. If you're going to give me Henry Golding as Snake Eyes as a part of the crew, like from his one off, okay, I'm good with that. If you're giving me Samara Armstrong also, like to like can we just take a 2-minute side tangent and ask why the fuck hasn't Samara Armstrong been like the biggest thing since Margot Robbie? I mean, let's be honest. Like, I mean, I thank God that they're doing a Ready or Not Part 2 with her in it. Because I feel like it should be a reminder to everybody that Samara Armstrong is like really, really fucking awesome. But, and you can litter the cast with that level of actor, right? Like, that's what I want as G.I. Joe people. And you take the Joe stuff seriously as you did the Transformers, like, team rollout stuff.
Yeah.
Brother, I'm there for it. Like, I'm really there for it. It just needs a sharp script. And I'm going to say... Let's keep the original director from this last Transformers movie.
Oh, I agree.
What was it? Rise of the Beasts? Like I really, like I said, I have Stephen Caple Jr. I mean, I have the fucking movie. I own the movie. I've watched it a couple of times. I'm not gonna lie to you. I love it. The soundtrack has nothing but bangers. Could you imagine? If they kept, like, they're going to keep it in the 90s, right?
I hope so.
G.I. Joe, imagine if the G.I. Joes had a 90s grunge soundtrack to the hip hop soundtrack the Transformers. And then we get the merging. Exactly.
Absolutely. I mean, give it to me.
I like, you know what it is? Like the reference point that they need to really look at, Small Soldiers.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Do you remember like Small Soldiers, how they did that soundtrack, which was hip hop but 80s pop songs redone? Something like that. Like I'm like, the announcements, I could not believe how excited I was when I saw that. I kind of literally was like stopped and I was like, what? They're actually gonna do it? They're gonna give me my peanut butter and chocolate together? Oh. As a fan, like, I know that you're an even bigger fan than I am of Transformers. What are your thoughts on this? And then there's another one I'm going to lead in with, which is, how do you feel about The Last Ronin, the live action version of that, that they announced?
So I mean, the Transformers G.I. Joe thing, I think, is a no-brainer. And everything you said is right. Like, we knew it was kind of sort of coming. And I'm glad that they're moving forward with it. I think if they can, like, just stay the course, like, the fan base will show up in some way, shape, or form. Like, it's the, like, oh, this wasn't the biggest hit we wanted, so let's change course again and change course again. That's when people get frustrated. Like, you can start small and build big. Like, and that's what they need to do. The Last Ronin, an R-rated live-action Ninja Turtles film, I don't think is a no-brainer. I think it's interesting. I get that the source material is very R-rated. I wonder how you, like, I worry, like, I'm excited for it, but I worry that you're alienating people because that franchise is so cross-generational.
Yeah. And also, it's not a kid's movie. And what happens in the last one? Because I started reading it, okay?
I have not started reading it yet.
Fuck, it is depressing.
Yeah.
Like, it's literally, like, the first 10 minutes.
I know the story. Yeah. Like, I read a rundown of the story. Like, this is some shit. Like, this, that's really heavy shit if a 9-year-old Ninja Turtles fan stumbles into this movie, you know?
Yes, with their fucking parent who doesn't care. It's an R-rated movie. I mean, like, this isn't even kinder trauma. Like, you know how, like, there's that whole kinder trauma genre? This isn't kinder genre. This is, like, you shouldn't be showing your fucking kids this movie because it's going to scar them. Because, not in the good way. Because this is not done in a... This is done in a very, like, R-rated, like, post-apocalyptic, like, getting vengeance for things, story. Like, I'm halfway through it, and, like, the big idea, like, I get out of it is that it's just sad. Like, it's like, one of those, like, you know, there's two kinds of, like, post-apocalyptic movies. There's the ones that are, like, Road Warrior / Mad Max / Furiosa, which are just, like, these, like, adrenaline punches. Yeah. And then there's the ones like The Road, Cormac McCarthy's The Road, which is the most depressing fucking thing in the world.
Yeah, the first 20 minutes of that movie, I was just like, I wish I was dead.
Yeah, like those are the type of movies that that say the apocalypse isn't fun. You should have fucking died during the apocalypse. And that's what The Last Ronin is that I should have died. Why, like, you know, I'm the last one left. Why did I die? Why didn't I die? And, man, dude, that's some fucking depressing shit. Like, I don't want, I don't mind it being a big live action movie, but, like, you better, like, aim it at not kids. Like, this is not a kid's thing because, man, you're going to scar some fucking kids with this. And I mean, you know, I don't care at the end of the day, but at the same time, it's like, what are you doing? Like, what are you, like, I hope that you do it for a good number, right? Like, if we want more of this, it has to be done on a budget, but not so much a budget that it suffers. But at the same time, something that you're not going to spend $300 million on this fucking thing because it's not going to make that money back. Like, you know, like do it cheap and fun and you make your money back, right? Like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Mutant Mayhem. Like for me, like other than the 89, that's the standard. Like that and 89 or I'm sorry, that and 90 are like the best Ninja Turtle things that I've seen. Yeah. Because they get it right, right? Like they get it right. And so like, I don't know. It's kind of a gambling thing, but at the same time, okay, let's do this. Let's figure it out. That wasn't on my 2024 bingo card, the announcement of that. So yeah, I mean, the other thing I wanted to ask you about, the thing that I'm excited for, is Glenn Powell got announced as the star of Edgar Wright's remake of The Running Man. And it's not the remake that excites me. It's the fact that Glenn Powell is teaming up with arguably one of the smartest directors in Hollywood that hasn't had a huge budget. And he's finally given a huge budget. I mean, I think to himself, like, I feel like Edgar Wright is one of those guys that wanted to stay in a certain budget range because it allowed him a lot of control. And I feel like now he's at the point where he has the power to command a certain kind of budget. And this is his first step up into a big studio picture with something I feel like is like the perfect project for him because it's multi-layered, right? Like it's like the thing that Joker isn't. Like it's multi-layered. It says a lot about entertainment, about us, about like, you know, where we are currently. But then he chooses Glenn Powell instead of a, you know, like The Rock or somebody else. Like I find it interesting. What were your thoughts when you heard, when I texted you about it? I don't know if you had heard it.
I'm wondering, like, is this an adaptation of the story or is this a remake of the Schwarzenegger film? Because the actual Bachman / Stephen King story is not really anything like the Schwarzenegger film. Like, they share a title, yes, and a very basic premise, and that's about it. So I'm like, much like the Roadhouse thing, I'm just like, which I still haven't watched, I'm just like, is this like in name only, or is this like another version of the story? Like, where are we going with it? Until I see some footage or know a little bit more, like, I'm excited, but I don't really have an opinion on it because, like, I love the Schwarzenegger film, but I don't hold it in a, like, you can't remake this kind of fashion, you know? Like, it's like, oh, okay, if you want to take another shot at that, that's fine. If it's an adaptation of the story, like, okay, well, we actually haven't seen a real adaptation of this story, so that'll be interesting.
So. No, it will be. Like, it's, I feel like it might be his own thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Like, it feels
or,
like...
Or, yeah, it could just be another, like, oh, we took the name and we kind of just made this mishmash thing. So, yeah, you know, I mean, it'll be fun. Like, Edgar Wright makes fun movies, so...
He really does. He really does. And his movies, like, I feel like have a cleverness to them that, like, that action movies don't necessarily have nowadays. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, there's this added layer of, like, there are, like, the elite level that are as good as Edgar Wright movies. But, like, when you watch an Edgar Wright movie, it's filled to the brim with ideas. And so much so that some would say they're overstuffed. Like, yeah. You watch Last Night in Soho, and it's so many things that the first time you watch it, you can't get your head around everything. And it's only like the second or third time if you like the movie that you see all of the things that he's trying to play with. It's like for me, I feel like at his best, he's a guy that's afraid that this is the last movie he's going to make. So he's trying to shove as many things that make sense genre-wise that he wants to do to accomplish it. Like Last Night in Soho is very much so a like a 60s pop, go-go pop horror movie that is like steeped in just as much in Italian giallo as it is regular slasher movies, as it is like 60s horror from the UK. And if you're not into it, you're really not into it. But if you are and you vibe with it, it's like all of this stuff together. It's just like Scott Pilgrim, right? Like there's a bunch of like things going on in that movie. Some would say it's overstuffed for a movie that's under 2 hours. I hope that he brings that kind of ness to this. And I mean, we already know he knows how to handle leads, and he knows my thing about him that excites me is that he understands, like when he casts a lead, he understands their strengths and plays to them. So he has to, like, him casting Glenn Powell isn't just a studio note. I feel like it's one of those things where it's like, I know how to use this guy. I'm going to use this guy. And we're going to see. I'm actually hoping that it's a little bit more like the Bachman tale, which is more like Logan's Run than anything else.
Right.
You know, I really do hope, because using Glenn Powell in that kind of manner, like with that smile and that charm, that would be interesting. So we'll see. We'll definitely see. And man, we always talk a lot about these things that we don't like. We've gotten to the point where we're going to probably have to curb the, which is probably for the best, because we haven't seen the second part of this. X-Men 97.
See where it goes. I mean, yeah. Just in like 2 or 3 minutes. Like we texted a lot about it. X-Men 97 is proving, just to show itself, that the X-Men, like, at its core, needs to be, like, character dramatics. Like,
yes.
Big plots work when you, for these characters, work when you build off of the characters. Like, and, this show is amazing. Absolutely amazing, like what they've accomplished in so short a time. Of course, it helps that they have a continuity they can kind of already lean on, but yeah, it is absolutely amazing what they've accomplished. They're getting it right, even if they're having to like to shrink it or like compress it and like keep these storylines you know, not 6 issues or not 6 episodes, really compress them down to like sometimes like literally a minute of the show.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely stunning what they're able to do. And it, we texted about this. It concerns me that all they're doing is proving that the X-Men will never truly work in a big screen format.
No, absolutely. And you're right. Like, that was the thing to me that, like, ultimately was, like, you hit it. Like, it was something that I was circling in my head, trying to figure out, like, what I was thinking about, why the show was so great. And it's the fact that we haven't had, like, and this is, I know this is a controversial statement, and I'll just say it, and I'll just leave it like it lays. But, like, none of the X-Men movies are really great. Like, you talked about X2, and I talked about First Class as being good entries, like being really good entries, right?
They're the two most solid entries. I do think both the films have problems, but they're definitely the two most solid entries, like non-solo. Like, the latter Wolverine films are fine. The first two Deadpool films are fine. Those are not X-Men team films. No. So like, yeah, as a team, like X2 I think works extremely well. There are parts of X1 that work really well. I mean, there's parts of all of them that work really well, but X-Men 2, like, really, really, like, kind of hits on something.
Yes.
And so does First Class.
Absolutely. They are not what X-Men the Animated Series and X-Men 97 are, which are full-bodied representations of these characters and what makes them so great. Like, part of the X-Men's problem is that they are so serialized and they're such a big group that they only work in a certain kind of format. And you brought that to light to me. And now it's very apparent to me.
It's a soap opera. Here's the thing about the X-Men. As a reader of the comics, it's also a thing where, I don't know if you've ever been hooked on an actual soap opera, but like when you hit that point and you get hooked in, you are hooked in. But there will eventually come a point where you're like, I can't do this anymore. I'm out. And you're just out. Because it's never going to stop. So, every real X-Men fan has that, like, I was hooked at this point. I left at this point. I came back at this point. I left at this point. I kind of dipped my toe back in at this point. Like, it's stupid and juvenile, but, like, that's why it works. And you can't really do that in a movie. Like, none of the Gambit Rogue shit in this episode, like, if you just put that in a movie, it doesn't work for anybody who's not somewhat already invested in the Gambit Rogue of it all. Like, if you just show that in a movie and it's to somebody who's not familiar with all of it, it's just like, what? Okay, whatever. Like, why is he so hung up on her? Why is she doing this? Like, why is this even a big deal? Like, they barely know each other. Like, but because we have spent, like, countless hours, decades, whatever, invested in, like, will these two work it out? It is the comic book Ross and Rachel, right?
Yes, it is. Very much so.
That, like, her dancing with Magneto and even I do not like Gambit and Rogue. I don't like those characters. I've never liked those characters. I know that makes me, like, a bit of an outlier X-Men-wise. But even I'm just like, oh, Gambit, man. Like, that's fucked up, dude. I'm sorry.
he's literally, Magneto has literally become the Paolo of the X-Men, like, universe.
I'm like, I feel so bad for this guy. But also, like, you know, even though I don't like the character, like, the ultimate, like, sacrifice, all of that shit at the end, like, him supercharging the fucking motorcycle and throwing it at her to get her out of the way of the Tri-Sentinel, like, and getting stabbed and blow, like, oh my god. I was just, seriously, like, this is how you fucking do this, man. Like, and they incorporate so much of, like, current X-Men stuff and the history of the X-Men, and there's all these little, like, things in the episode, to the point of, like, there's a moment right before everything goes down, you can see the Watcher in the sky.
Yes.
Which, and, like
wow. Talk about brilliant, right?
And, like, that's, like, if you're paying attention, it's like, oh, something is about to fucking happen. Like, because this guy shows up to watch, like, the tragedies of the world. And, like, that's what he's there for. It's so well done. Like, again, it concerns me that it's this well done, how, like, you can't translate that. So just like the, you know, so much. I'm rambling, but yeah, it concerns me about how we're actually going to get a live action X-Men thing, because you can't translate what this show is doing to live action. You just cannot.
You really can't. You can't. You literally can't. And also, like, here's the thing is that the reason why, like, for me, like, I've been thinking about it, the reason why this works so well is because we've had 30 years with these characters and this TV series. So yeah, what they're able to do, as long as they are writing it, and they're, like, the thing is that, don't get this mistaken, like, they are writing, the writing in this is elite level. Like, it is, it's some of the best writing on TV right now. Like, because of what they're doing, how they're doing it, and just the plain ability to take, like, for me, it's weird because it's this beautiful symbiosis of what the TV series is, the original one, what we thought about it, and combining and merging it with what our childhood memory of it was, right? Like, if you watch the 90s, like, if you watch the original, it's kind of stilted, but the themes, the characters, everything still works. It's just, it's a little rusty, right? Yeah. But when you replay it in your head when you were a kid, it still translates. This is this is the writers taking that childhood memory of theirs and writing to that elite level. Like, yeah. I know that sounds weird, but that's exactly what they're doing. Like, they would never, like, the people from the original series would never have written Gambit as a cuck, right? Like, a cuckold. But these guys do, because it's purposeful. It's not just to write him as a cuckold, right? It's for us to finally have sympathies towards a guy who was just a piece of shit. And, like, I mean, let's be honest, like, Gambit was a questionably weird character.
Yeah, even in the comics, like, there were very, very, like, pointed, like, oh yeah, he's not a good dude. So,
not only is he not a good dude, but he's very questionable, right? Like, he's very questionable. And I'm just like, no. But anywho, I'm very interested in seeing how this goes, right?
Yeah, where do you go from here? Like, there's so many things, like, because, like, they very, like, showing Cable is very intentional. Like, there's going to be, like, time things. Like, you're going to start playing the original show played with time. Like, this show very much is going to do that. So, like, I'm excited for where it goes from here. And, yes. You know, it's, we'll have a bigger discussion on that. And I didn't even get to, like, I'm only 1.5 episodes in, but I did start watching Fallout on Amazon Prime. So
I did too. And I can briefly say, wow, it's my jam, because
I didn't play the game. So I have no expectation about what any of it should be, but it is very, very interesting. So,
yes.
Well, and clearly expensive.
Super fucking expensive. Like, wow. Like, just like, yeah, we'll have to talk about, like, the effects and just, like, I will say this much. There's a way to do it, and it's not how Halo does it. It's how Fallout does it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll leave it at that. I will leave it at that, because we definitely have to have a combo about that one.
All right. So yeah, go check out everything else I'm doing over at xwingfiles.com, or you can read my writing, which piece recently posted over at Adam's website.
Yes. He, like, this week we're gonna have another piece posting because it's every other week. And you can just read my work, movieisle.com. You know, of course, you can hear me here almost every week. Sometimes things happen, life comes up, which is okay. Go ahead and read everything that on themovieisle.com, and we will be back next week talking about, sounds like we're going to have a continuing conversation, which is exciting. I'm actually excited to talk about Fallout.
Me too. I may have finished it by then, so I plan on watching, because it's only 8 episodes, so yeah. I plan on getting through most of it this weekend. So,
All
right. We'll see you guys next week.
Next week. Star Wars, number 2 comics, number 3 Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit, number 4 Mario, number 5 Weird Al, number 6 Batman, number 7 Kal-El, number 8 Simpsons, number 9 TV, number 10 every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say it all together if you're with me now.